Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Unpacking the Toolbox is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Sorry.
Oh no, I love it.
My son's school this morning has something called the feast, where every single parent brings in a dish, right? And then the kids all sit at long tables. And basically we go around and serve the children and they practice saying like, yes, please, or no, thank you.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so the food is like all for the kids. And I was like, whatever. It's like 11 a.m. I fucking made a plate.
A huge
turkey,
ass plate.
Gravy,
oh my
cranberry,
God.
Stuffing, sweet potato pie, whipped cream, corn souffle, green bean souffle. Is it a souffle?
Corn souffle.
No, no, no.
What the hell? That's
and one of the kids thought it would be delicious if the corn bread souffle thing had colored sprinkles all on top.
Oh my God. And
so
threw
like,
sprinkles
yeah,
on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll eat that too. I mean, what am I thinking? It is a Friday. We've got work to do. We've got a podcast to record. And I was like, well, I got that on lock. It was not bad, but I definitely feel very tight in my pants.
What did you make? What did you make for the kids?
I lied to everybody.
You picked that shit up at Bristol Farms.
No.
You were like,
Bristol
let me
Farms
get a
way too expensive. I ordered.
Went to Whole Foods.
I signed up. Well, first of all, everyone just thinks we're going to bring shabby pretzels.
Yeah.
And we did that last year. And Adam was like, I'm not bringing shabby pretzels. That's like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Like, we're not doing that. And so I ordered all those Caesar salads. My son loves Caesar salads and no one had signed up for salads because salad's so dumb. But I picked up, I just literally got Caesar salad mix in bags, dumped it into bowls morning. But then
we're like, I made a Caesar salad.
Was like, what did you make? And I was like, well, I made the Caesar salad, but I made the dressing from scratch and I grew the lettuce in my yard.
You're such a liar. Oh my God. You know, they're a bunch of scandal fans and they're going to be like, that bitch lied.
She's
going to
be like,
liar.
Oh my God, that's the mom who has it all. She's got the Scandal Rewatch podcast. She's got Katie's crib. She's an acting career and she fucking grows lettuce and looks amazing. And I was like, and don't you fucking forget it.
Oh my God. But when they hear this podcast, they're going to be like, what?
They're going to come over to my house for a plate and they're going to be like, where are your raised farmer's boxes in your yard where you cultivate a full garden? And I'm like, I don't know how to make a goddamn thing. Speaking of which, can we just talk about, and then we'll do an intro, but can you tell all of our listeners what lunch you packed every day at Scandal for like a lot of time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we mentioned it a little bit in one of the episodes. It was I'm obsessed with canned beets, canned beets and green beans. And I put like a can of each in, you know, a Tupperware thing, and then put oil and vinegar. And that's like, I was having beets earlier today, like this morning. I had breakfast and I had
Is your poop just like red?
No, because our toilets are black. You know,
what's funny? There is nothing worse than a black toilet. You can't see what's going on.
I can. So part of me is like, am I dying? Like, is there blood in my stool? Like, is there blood in my... I know, I can. We got black toilets.
I mean, it's sexy. Like, a black toilet is fucking sexy. But they're sexy toilets. Like, I get it. A black toilet is... There's something that feels naughty and sexy about it. I like it. But I also take... I take a big responsibility in, like, taking a poop. And then looking at it to see how I'm doing. Like, have I had enough greens? Like,
you're supposed to.
It used to be in the olden days, there was like
a poop-a-meter. Poop-a-meter.
No. Yes. Kings and shit in England. There was someone's job who the king would take a dump in the bidet next to in their royal apartment or whatever. And then someone, a doctor, would check the duty and make sure that their digestion was like, all was well.
I bet they didn't have black toilets back then. They didn't have, well, they didn't have anything. They had holes in the ground,
unless
right?
You were the king. I think you were pooping in like a rolling throne.
So weird.
I really think so. A throne thing, like a wooden throne. I can't believe you've never eaten beets and pooped in a toilet to see.
Yeah, my toilet paper isn't black, so that's, you know, I'm still.
Guys, this is the greatest podcast episode anyone has ever been interested in, and it all started with beets. Guillermo used to bring his salads, and also talking about me not growing shit and not being great in the kitchen. Darby would make the most incredible salads.
Yes.
At Scandal with shit she actually grew.
With kumquats was the first time that I was like, oh, you could put kumquats in salad. And now I'm obsessed with kumquats, but she grew all that stuff. Yeah, she grew kumquats.
She was unbelievable. And she would have like half a lemon in one of those lemon baggies that when you squeeze it, it catches the seeds.
Yeah.
And then she would have like some cut up tofu and just like deliciousness. And I'm like, if I had Darby like cooking for me, I would eat like that all the time.
Oh, hell yeah. And she loves it too. She's so good at it.
She loves growing stuff. Yeah. Good at it. Which is funny because I think we haven't gotten there yet, but when we get into the flashback episodes, when Abby, you see her in the past when she was sort of like a Susie homemaker, like baking and stuff like that. Darby actually has a quality of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, she's a very good cook. She's a very good baker. She's very comfortable in a kitchen. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be, that is not my thing.
During the pandemic, she did a bunch of videos of her teaching how to cut grapefruits up, like in different ways, different creative ways to cut grapefruit. And it was the most mesmerizing thing I'd ever seen. I was like,
mesmerizing. Yeah. And her laugh breakdowns on the videos, she's the most infectious.
Yes, I love her.
Like when she's laughing and having like a mental breakdown, thinking something's so funny.
It's the best. Yeah.
Do you think it's because she's just so pretty? She's so beautiful.
That's part of it. But it's just so fun to watch her crack up.
Yeah, she's so magical.
Yeah.
She's also redhead that has the most, like, she just looks like a unicorn. Talking about, like, people who G and I have talked about on the podcast, like, you can't hide from anywhere. I'm fine. I can't imagine walking through life as Darby with that fire engine.
Yeah.
She's red.
Yeah. She's so good about going incognito, though. You know what I mean? Because she'll throw on a hat, like,
glasses.
Put a ponytail. Like, she's so good about it. She's so good
and,
about
like,
it.
Some very cool trench coat.
Yeah.
Today's episode of the Scandal Rewatch podcast, we're talking about episode 105 called Crash and Burn, which aired on April 26th in 2012. It was written by Mark Wilding and directed by Steve Robin. It was guest starring Brendan Hines as Gideon Wallace, Bellamy Young as First Lady Melly Grant, Joshua Molina as David Rosen, Graham Bechel as Hank Tanner, and Darren Petty as Andrew Mackelson.
Yes.
Up, we got to this place again. Are you going to do the synopsis or Shimiji?
Let's see what goes down. Let me hear you do that.
Okay, let's see. Synopsis. Olivia and her team help defend the pilot of a commercial plane that crashed, killing all on board. When Amanda Tanner goes missing, Huck must call upon his past to help find her. Fitz asks the vice president for help.
Very nice. Yo, can I just say how special this episode is? I mean, there were so many emotions. I cried like a bunch of times watching this episode, and not only because it, you know, because of the tragic stuff that happens in the episode and the things that the characters are going through, and there's, you know, the plane crash, and
yes,
but it, I was super emotional about it because it made me miss doing the show. It made me miss the cast. It made me miss Huck.
Really?
Like, I was like, oh my God, this was such a special time, especially that opening scene when we're all in Olivia's apartment trying to figure out what happened to Amanda Tanner.
Yep.
We were all just like on point and just going back and forth. And it just brought me back to those days where we'd all be shooting together, right? And we would have so much fun.
Oh my God, it was such an ensemble. It almost feels like a play. That scene that opens this episode where we're all in Olivia's apartment and Amanda Tanner's been taken, and every single one of us, it's like music, like you had said before on this podcast, like everyone's interjecting lines and we're all holding this ball up and keeping the scene going and like working together as a team. And you say, there's a guy watching you, her trash was taken out. And then Olivia says, how do you know?
Yeah.
And you say, because that's how I do it.
That's how I would do it. Yeah.
I love hearing that, G, that like you watch these episodes and you're like, I mean, Huck has so much in this episode and we'll get into that. But like, I could see why you miss playing him.
Yeah.
Like he was so special.
Yeah. And you know, oftentimes like you work on a project and you're like, fuck, I wish in the moment, I wish I was more in the moment and really enjoyed it while we were doing, because it was such a special, like, what do they say? Lightning in a bottle. Like it's so rare to have this experience. But for Scandal, I miss it and I miss the people and I miss the show, but I don't feel that because I feel like we really, really enjoyed the experience and being around each other and knowing how special it was and not taking it for granted and just relishing in it. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. I felt like we had such a gift, like also knowing when it was the, you know, Shonda let us know way in advance that it was ending. And I just feel like we all really got to like therapeutically like process. I felt like when it was over, we like you said, we just laid our head in the pillow and know that we all made the most and of this experience and didn't take it for granted. Yeah. And
I didn't regret anything. I didn't regret not, you know, not enjoying it or not. Yeah.
Oh my God, me either.
Yeah.
Ugh, it was the fucking best.
Yeah.
So we know that she's gone missing. You know what's funny? Wow. I feel like Roxanne Dawson was around in this episode.
I do too. I remember her. I feel like, well, we'll talk about it, but in the diner scene with Huck and Charlie, I remember Roxanne directing us in that scene. I don't remember Steve Robin, but then I remember Steve Robin directing me when I'm torturing Charlie.
Weird.
Which is weird. I wonder if he wasn't a... That which would happen sometimes.
Well, she was our producing director this season, so I don't know. But I remember coming on the plane crash. Harrison and Quinn are like walking down this like hill. We were at the Disney Ranch that day, like in Santa Clarita again, wearing fucking fall clothes, sweating ball sacks.
Yes.
And we come upon the set, which is so impressive. Like that's when I remember being like, my God, like this show has like a budget. Like I came upon this field where there's like a blown up plane and there's like fake body parts everywhere and all of these flags. And
I couldn't remember, Katie. Was that plane actually there? Was that CGI'd in? I couldn't remember.
It was actually there.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I think in my memory it is.
Right.
But
right.
I think. Correct. I could be wrong, but like maybe at the Disney Ranch, that's like in stock there.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like at Universal Studios.
Yeah, like I think that might be like sets that are there. I have no idea. I have a memory of Roxanne saying to me and me being so upset, don't have your mouth agape like that again when you come upon the plane crash, because Quinn just does that all the time.
I love you when you had your mouth agape.
Thanks, G. Now I look back and I'm like, fuck, she was right. I should have taken that note. Quinn does that way too much. And I need to grow up. Like,
yeah, but that's her too. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I shouldn't have been doing it. I should have taken the note and I didn't. And I remember her giving me the note and me being like kind of upset. And for once thinking like, first of all, I'd never been a series regular on the show before. So it had never occurred to me like, oh, like you should think about your character in relation to like all the other episodes and like the character you're building.
Right.
Like, I didn't, I was like from the guest star world. Like,
same.
I was like, oh, I just was treating each story like in it of itself. Like, I wasn't really, I would never be like, oh, well, in the last episode, I had my mouth agape at Amanda Tanner's door. And then the first episode, I had my mouth agape when Quinn was, when Olivia was berating her on the park bench with the dog.
Ripping her a new
butthole.
Now
I'm like, shit, I had my mouth agape way too much.
But also, like, as an actor, you don't want to think about, you know what I mean? You're in the moment of the scene. So you're not, you can't remember. You're not, I'm not thinking like, oh, I did this with my eyes in this scene, so I shouldn't do it in this one. And, you know, you shouldn't be thinking about that too much. But
right.
Listen, you felt like it was a thing, but watching the episode, your mouth
you
agape.
You were like, that's the fourth time Quinn has had her mouth agape.
Was very appropriate for me.
Well, thank you. Since you are the best acting ever, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Then I wrote in my notes, we fucking meet Charlie.
Oh, yes. This is the introduction to Charlie. Yeah.
Like you see him.
Yes.
You're eating a sandwich, which, by the way, do you remember that?
Listen, bitch, let me tell you something. I wrote a whole page on eating moments. It literally says eating moments, Katie. I'm not even kidding.
I wrote my first question. My first question is, why Huck Finn? Second question, what sandwich were you eating when you saw Charlie?
Don't get me started.
Do you remember what it was?
Yes, of course I do.
Okay, tell me about eating moments.
It was on whole wheat toast and it was lettuce, tomato, and mustard, and it was a turkey sandwich. I'm pretty sure there was Swiss cheese on it as well. But the great thing about our props team was Jeff Props and George, I mean, we love them so much.
The best.
But they, when you would have an eating scene, they would go up to you the day before or usually the day before, or a couple of days before that they knew that scene was coming up. And they'd be like, what do you want to eat? If it was in the script that it was a sandwich, they'd be like, what kind of sandwich do you want? Once I had to eat a fucking cheeseburger when I had a scene with Joe Morton. And all I could think about was shooting that scene and getting to eat that cheeseburger. And then I'm not even, look how excited I am. This is crazy. But the thing about shooting a show like this is they make several of the sandwiches or the burgers, or they buy them because, you know, you have to do several takes. So all I would think in my head was, oh, I'm going to get to take the rest of them home. Or I would get pissed if somebody else was like, can I get that? I was like, excuse me.
Guillermo, you are, it looked delicious.
And then for the Half-Baked fans, I don't know if you can tell, a little salute to Half-Baked, they put Funyuns on my plate. And Funyuns is a big thing on Half-Baked when Kenny is, you know, going through the list of things and at the end someone says, Funyuns, don't forget the Funyuns or some shit like that.
Did you on purpose pick Funyuns or did they just happen to put the Funyuns on there?
I remember us talking about it and saying how funny it would be if we put Funyuns on the plate because it was a little sort of wink to Half-Baked.
Was George Props or Jeff Props, were they like Half-Baked fans to know that?
Jeff was, yeah.
Oh, that
Jeff,
tracks.
Jeff
that
for
tracks.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the best.
But yes, and so eating is always, you know, I think that certain actors are super scared or they're nervous when they have to eat in a scene because, you know, people don't want to eat and getting fat. But, well, or Tony and Scott, I'm sure, but they never ate on the show. The only thing they ate was Olivia. Sorry, take that out.
No, keep it in, honey. Keep it in.
But anyway,
no, but eating. But then there are some actors who swear by it and think that it makes you the best actor ever. Like,
yes.
I think that I've heard for years that, like, if you go back into like all of Brad Pitt's performances, he's almost never doing an entrance without eating something.
Really?
He eats in most of his scenes. Yeah, because there are very few things that you can do as an actor where you can't fake it.
Yes.
You cannot fake eating. Eat. You have to actually eat the
food. But people do it, but actors do it. And bad eating in a film or on a TV show is the worst.
Yes.
Gilmore Girls, I love the show. The worst fucking eaters in the world.
Wow, I need to go back and watch
Alexis
that.
Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham,
she's
I love y'all.
She's just pushing bullshit around on the plate.
And their coffee cups are like, you know, like there's nothing in them.
No.
Like it's the worst.
No.
They never take a bite.
Nope.
If they do,
nope.
It's like...
Nope.
Oh, it's
so any actors listening to this podcast, if you want to consider yourself legit,
yeah,
you got to fucking eat in the
you
scenes
eat,
because
y'all.
It also does make you a better actor. You can't fake. Well, you can fake eating, but you shouldn't. Smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, you can't
out.
Fake that either. Making out. You can't fake.
So
you,
like but. Those are the moments where they're kind of like actor gifts. Also like acting with a baby. Like, you can't really, like, you have to actually, like, be there because it truly is, like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I remember my first, like, major family eating scene with on this other show I was on, my first series regular when I was 25, Lori Metcalf, who's, like, everyone thinks she's an incredible actress, myself included. We had these family, like, Sunday night dinner scenes that would take forever, and they would go around and around and around and shoot everybody's point of view, and everyone was eating. And Lori Metcalf would eat the shit out of her food.
Really?
And I would be like, this woman
she's a good eater. Oh, yeah.
And she's a great actress.
She's on Big Bang Theory. She's a great eater. They're always eating on that show.
She's
an
amazing
good.
Eater. Yeah. And she's talking while she's eating, which is what Brad Pitt does, too. He's talking with a full mouth. He's talking with, like, wiping his mouth with the napkin. He's talking while he's taking sips of whatever drink is being served. And, like, that makes you good, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Full on agree.
Okay, so then you see Charlie, who was cast crazily. When we see him for a blip while you're hacking to see that he was caught on a traffic cam.
Yeah.
It's the first time we're seeing this character, Charlie, who's played by fucking George Newbern, who's the dad from Father of the Bride.
Yeah. Wait, he's the dad? He's the dad or he's the groom? He's the groom, right? Yeah. Now he's a dad. He's a dad now. He's a daddy now.
He would get cast as the dad now. But at the time, he was the groom.
Oh, George.
And he was also the boyfriend in Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes. And George told me a story once. I bet you were there that he was super close to getting the role of Marty McFly in Back to the Future.
Screen tested against Michael fucking J. Fox. They flew him out. He was going to Northwestern at the time. He was a drama major. He was auditioning and they flew him in and he screen tested against Michael J. Fox.
How amazing is that?
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, I just think the casting choice on that.
Oh, so good.
And he did not know. None of us knew. The writers didn't know.
Yeah, no.
That Charlie would be what Charlie became.
But I love that they cast against type. You know what I mean? They didn't cast like some sort of goon looking guy that you're like, oh, he's a bad guy.
The bad guy.
George
right.
looks like the loveliest, like kindest, just
a dad.
You know, a dad
he's like
next
the
door.
Most
Yeah.
80s sitcom dad you've ever seen in your life or 90s. Like, he's just so, like, I mean, he's from Arkansas.
Is he?
Go get a snack and we'll be right back.
There's a lot happening these days. But I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters, without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Can I just say really quickly, I love in this scene is one of the first times, maybe it's the second or third time that we've seen it on in the first season, but that Mike Huck's computer becomes the camera.
Right.
So they would take away my computer, like this is us on set getting ready to shoot the scene, and they would put a camera right in dead in my face. And I would have to look into the camera and
pretending
I was typing.
It was the screen.
Yes. And that was so much fun. I love doing that.
They would call it Huck Cam. It was called
Huck Cam. Yeah.
And so then later on in post, they would superimpose like the green like numbers and like computer types of letters going over Guillermo's face. But I had to be in Huck Cam all the time, too, like just kind of crouched down next to you. And we're both looking like dead into the camera as you're like fakely pretending to hit keys.
And Huck's, I feel like we all loved being in Huck's office. It was such a special set, right? It was so unique and industrial and just a lot of wires and
growing
buttons
weed.
And things. He had fucking a little grow house in the back. Yeah, towards like season 3 or 4 or something. They added that.
Like, did they ever know? I mean, I felt like there were all these fucking plants hanging where you were just like, I know they weren't weed, but I used to be like, this is on track.
Right? Yes.
Huck's little dark hydroponic.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hydroponic.
Sounds right to me.
Then we see Harrison is, everyone's trying to listen to this black box recording from the plane crash to figure out who is truly at fault for the plane crashing. Is it the pilot, you know, Darren Petty, who played the husband of the pilot so well, hires Olivia Pope to sort of represent the pilot of the plane that she was not at fault. And everyone's listening to the black box and we see Harrison doing like the most amazing, like,
oh yeah,
that he's so musical and he's like obsessively listening to the box. It's in this episode where I'm like, this fuck. I love that there are 3 degrees of Britney Spears on yes. Scandal. You were in a Britney Spears music video.
Yeah.
Shonda wrote Crossroads.
That's right. Yes. Crossroads. Yep.
And Columbus choreographed
one of her tours. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
that's so crazy. Yeah.
Why did she never visit set?
Right.
Between the whole thing of like, listening to the black box over and over again, figuring it out. And then doesn't Harrison look at us? We're at the coffee station and he shouts like, it wasn't the plane. It wasn't that. And his eyes are all red. And you could tell, you know, I feel like Harrison had red makeup put on his eyes. Plus his eyes looked insane. It was like
he was up all night. Yeah.
He hadn't slept because he's just like listening and listening and listening and trying to decode what's in this. And then he yells at them and says something like, I don't remember what it was, but it was fucking brilliant.
But it was so good.
We learn that Lori wasn't drinking.
Right.
Again, all these guest stars, co-stars, their performances are fucking ridiculous.
So good.
The stewardess that was too drunk on her birthday and stayed in, and then Abby goes and visits her in the hotel room, and she's like, doesn't even know that everyone had gone down.
So good. So good. The one that was hungover.
Yes. It was so good.
She played Carly Reston, and her actress's name is Amanda Fuller. And
did you fucking Google that?
I sure did, Katie, because of what you were just saying. She's so good that I was like, we have to give this actor a shout out. Her name is Amanda Fuller, and she's been in a ton of stuff. She was in a Grey's episode. She played Brittany Murphy in a TV movie about Brittany Murphy. Remember the amazing Brittany Murphy?
I bet she fucking killed that.
But this actress fucking just brought it.
No, she was unbelievable. She's hysterical crying. She's funny at the top. She has to open the door and be like, what?
What's
and
wrong
then
with,
she has to go into this whole thing where she realized she just missed death.
Darby is so good in this scene too, because you could see how cold she is. And she's like, she doesn't know how to deal with someone being emotional. So
she's
pushes
so
the tissue box forward.
Yes.
And then she keeps crying. And then she pushes it forward again. Like,
oh my God. That's so classic.
Yeah. She's not comforting at all. Yeah.
Was that written in the stage directions or is that Darby just making genius acting choices?
I want to say it was Darby making genius acting choices.
I want to say that too.
So good. Like she did not know how to comfort this. What the character did not know how to comfort someone that's breaking down. Like that. It was just so fun to watch her work.
We're back in the OPA office. Huck comes in and says and screams, Amanda Tanner is dead.
Ugh.
Ugh. Yeah. That's me and Guillermo sound.
God. Ugh. I remember getting chills doing that scene. Oh, that was one of my favorite. You know how you have scenes that it just feels so good to do and they stick with you? Oh, I just remember that moment.
What were our lines leading up to it? We were all like, I just remember we're running around in a fury,
talking
flurry,
about,
and Olivia's giving out fucking orders like, you go this and you go this and you go this. And then you're just like, you yell, which Huck never does.
Yeah. Everyone's caught up because I don't know if we mentioned it, but a plane crashes in the episode and it kills 120 people. And Olivia now represents the pilots union.
Right.
And she expects the airline is going to blame Lori, the pilot, which they do.
I thought we were all like running around talking about like how to find Amanda or something. And then you just come, Amanda Tanner's dead.
Yeah. It was something like that. Yeah.
You record stop the whole scene and Olivia looks at you.
And she's like, are you sure? I just shake my head. Yes.
And then, and then that's my favorite fucking Kerry Washington moment acting in this episode.
Oh, me too. I wrote that down, too.
You and I have the same taste.
Yes.
When she marches out to the street to the black sedan that's been fucking watching it. And she's like, roll down your fucking window. And she bangs on the windshield. And she's like, tell your guy that I know.
Yeah, talk into your little microphone in your wrist and you tell him that I know. Yeah.
When I see her do that scene, I feel like she is summoning her Bronx, her like roots, like her Bronx. Like, this is how I talk to someone when I am like in my most power and I'm so pissed and I've been so wrong.
Absolutely.
It's remarkable. And then she turns away from screaming at the two dudes in the sedan and the whole shot goes into slow-mo.
And she like rubs her arms. She
yes.
Just, which is so, ooh, just I that little bumps. Moment. Me too.
Oh God. Oh my God. It's unfucking believable. So we know she's dead, which is horrible. And stupid ass Quinn Perkins.
Yeah.
Makes a promise, finds Amanda Tanner's dad, brings him to the office and said, everything's going to be okay. I promise. To which Olivia is like, Quinn, can I speak to you for a minute at the coffee station?
At the coffee station?
And then I'm like, yeah, what? And she's like, we don't make promises ever. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, Amanda Tanner is dead. And I'm like, what? I was not mouth agape there. I gave you other options.
Nope. Just real quickly in this scene, we are introduced to Hank Tanner, who is Amanda Tanner's dad, and it's played by Graham Bekel. Now, let me tell you something. I went down a rabbit hole Googling homeboy because I was like, I do that with all the co-stars because it's so fun to see what they've been in. So Graham Bekel was in fucking Brokeback Mountain. He plays Anne Hathaway's dad. In that fucking amazing scene when they're having Thanksgiving dinner, Anne Hathaway and Jake Gyllenhaal, they have the TV playing and their little son is like watching the TV and the mother's like, you eat your food, stop watching TV. And Jake Gyllenhaal goes and turns off the TV and the dad gets up and he's like, turns it back on. Anyway, it's a back and forth, but it's such a powerful scene. And this man played Anne Hathaway's dad.
Wow. I would have never known that.
How great is he in this episode? Like he's heartbreaking.
And what a hard.
Yes.
Like, let's come in, let's meet you, and let's have you be here on the worst day of your character's life. Like,
he's
in
so
the morgue,
raw. Yeah.
Seeing your daughter's fucking body. Like, this guy is, he's just so vulnerable in this episode. And he's so sad, and to see this like grown masculine ass man like breaking down, he was, again, perfect fucking casting.
Katie, I was wondering, we'll get to it, but this episode, like, you, I don't even have to say it, right?
Oh, I remember it forever. You and I have goosebumps. Yeah,
I think that's why I cried so much watching the episode, because I was remembering that. And oh, it was just such a, yeah, but we'll get to it.
Oh my God, Guillermo and I, we have to get there. We're going to get to that scene really soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Olivia calls Fitz. He didn't know that she's dead.
Yes.
They do like a split screen down the center with like, you know, where they split the screen in two and there's like a black bar between their phone call. And Olivia is the first person to tell Fitz that Amanda Tanner's dead. And he's like, come look me in the eye. You know, I'm telling the truth. It's not something I would ever fucking do. And she says, yeah, but you let Cyrus off his leash. You know, if a dog mauls a baby, it's the owner's fault. And, you know, that's on you.
Yeah, she said he's a pit bull. You let your dog off the leash. Yeah. Oh, it's such a great scene. Yeah,
it is such a fucking great scene.
I wrote, come on, split screen in my notes.
Hilarious.
And then I wrote very Brian De Palma, because Brian De Palma does that a lot in his movies. He does split screen. Yeah. Oh. Such a powerful scene, yeah.
Then I wrote, they do right by the pilot and they have an alibi that she wasn't drinking. Then we go into Olivia asks, oof, this was my title. Whoa, G acting. Whoa.
Oh, man.
Which is basically for the scene where Olivia comes into your office and says, I need you to help me find the body.
Yeah.
And if you need me to come get you, you know, just call or something like that. And we're like, what? What is this? What is happening?
These scenes with Huck and Olivia were always so, so special because there was just that unspoken like connection with those two, right? The room was so full of emotions and like just stuff when we would do those scenes. And it was so easy to play, but it was exhilarating to play these scenes with Carrie. It was so much fun. And in this episode, I think it's the first time, and it's the first time you see Huck torture someone, but it's the first time that I thought, oh my God, this is going to a really dark place with my character, you know? And I freaking loved it. I was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life as an actor.
Oh, Guillermo.
Oh, I felt so, it was so great.
But it's true. They asked of you, like what they asked of you was so fucking wild. And you went there so beautifully. And I wrote,
well, thanks, Katie.
I wrote, whoa, geez, acting whoa in that scene.
Not to get too deep, but a person that's been through a lot of shit. I mean, we've all been through a lot of shit, but this is like a gift to be able to, you know, slice yourself. Sally Field said this once in an interview. They were like, how do you prepare for those emotional scenes? And she said, I start symbolically sort of slicing myself open emotionally and opening up all those old wounds and scars and shit that happened to you. And I'm super like, if somebody walks in the room and they're going through a really hard time, my eye goes right to them and my heart opens up and I'm like, I can't like settle and I can't really have a good time if I see someone that's going through
something sad.
Yes, an empath. Anyway, so it was a gift to be able to play this character and I just use that shit. You know what I mean?
You can like go there and you feel like you're not allowed to do that in your day-to-day life. So to like get to be able, you know, some people would like scream at a steering wheel or like sob, cry in a shower.
Yeah.
And most people probably don't even let themselves do that. And then it's so awesome when you're an actor that you get to just like
to do this stuff. Yeah.
Let yourself go, like go to a really dark place, go to like a really scary emotional place. And it's okay because you were in a safe environment.
It was also exciting and not knowing what was going to happen when I was doing the scene, like emotionally. Do you know what I mean? That was so exciting to be like, this is so fucked up. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, if I'm going to cry or whatever, what I'm going to feel and do. Anyway.
Okay. Then I wrote, oh my God, he has Charlie on the tarp.
Yes.
Huck gets his red toolbox. I put 8,000 exclamation points. And I wrote red toolbox multiple times.
This is the first time we see the toolbox, which is so funny because our podcast is called Unpacking the Toolbox. Yes.
Unpacking the Toolbox, baby. Did you ever know that this was going to be his thing?
No, not at all. Not at all. I knew when we got the episode at the table read or the day before or whatever, but before that, no, I had no idea. But again, I freaking loved it. I was like, God, he's gonna fucking torture someone with all these tools in his toolbox.
How did you make George Newbern feel safe? Because I didn't know him very well, but I remember him being like, I can't believe I'm doing this job. I have one scene, you know, where I have like talking with Guillermo Diaz in a diner, and then I'm like naked. He was like in a duct tape underwear on a tarp where I just have to scream a lot. And I was like, I don't know, for like an older dude who has a very successful career, like, I don't know what you would think of that job. What was it like on the day? Were you very collaborative? Were you nervous? Was he nervous?
I think we were both nervous. I was super nervous, but an excited nervous, you know what I mean? Because the scene was so good. But I think the thing with me and George, we, as people and as the characters, we clicked right away. Like, it felt right. You know how sometimes that happens on a movie or a TV show where you're like, oh, this just, and I think that was the case with all the regulars on Scandal. Something about this cast it was just right. It just made sense. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And when Charlie came into the picture, it made sense. And Huck and Charlie, it just clicked with him. It was so easy to do these scenes with him because it just felt right. And also me and George, like, crack up a lot. We love to laugh, as you know, because you love to laugh with us too.
The three of us two were together a lot over the 7 years.
Yeah.
And what's so funny about you two seeing you do these scenes with him, you're both two of the funniest dudes I know, two of the most sweetest in your hearts, like people I know, like really genuinely like want good things for people. And then to just watch this episode and see him fucking screaming his head off while you're doing horrifying fucking things to him. Like, I can't.
He's drilling holes into him. Yeah.
It's horrible. Is that what you were doing? It was drilling holes?
Yeah. Yeah. He's drilling holes in his body. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? That's disgusting. Mm-hmm. All because he won't tell you where the Amanda Tanner body is.
Yeah. I'm just asking him where her body is and he won't tell me. But in my notes, I wrote, to film this was frightening, exhilarating, anxiety-inducing. I also wrote, it felt like an orgasm. I was in a trance doing this scene.
Holy shit.
And then I wrote, if it's like chanting, you know, when you chant and you just get in a sort of trance, saying the words that Shonda wrote and that the Scandal writers wrote feels like chanting. Cause it's, again, we've talked about this before. It's so well written and it just flows out of your mouth so well. I felt like that happened a lot doing a Huck scenes because I felt like I would go in a trance because sometimes, you know, you get caught up like, fuck, am I going to remember the lines? And then I'm sure you do this too or you've thought about this, but it gets to the point where they're rolling and they're like, all right, action. In my head, I think, all right, let me see if I remember my lines and just let the words come out.
That's
and
right.
You have to say them super fast. So part of you just has to like relinquish control and just whatever happens, happens, and whatever comes out, comes out. When all the words come out right, oh, it's the best.
Feels
it's the best
like
feeling. Yeah.
That aha moment or whatever, that like you're in the flow, like you're in that human heightened high vibrational flow where you're like sort of, there is no time, there is no then or future. You're just like really heightened connective tissue, like right then and there. But I think that makes a lot of sense, the trance part, because I do think sometimes Huck, the way you sound when you're like doing some of those scenes is you're like, it almost sounds like you're chanting. I've never even thought about that until this moment, but it's sort of, oh my God, I could barely watch it. I was like completely terrified.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have, I put a shitload of exclamation points for Sally Langston, first time ever.
Yes, yes.
All in the White House, he's trying to pass the DREAM Act, which is similar to like DACA, isn't it?
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, yeah.
Fitz wants and knows that this is the right thing to do to be passed. And Sally Langston is holding up all the votes and not letting it happen. And Fitz has the most like amazing monologue to her about like, haha, yeah, yeah, fuck you. You're going to put the DREAM Act through.
Yes.
And Sally Langston is so wonderful. And fans must have gone so crazy because that's Meredith Grey's mom from Grey's Anatomy.
Yes. Kate, well, listen, can we talk about Kate Burton? What a fucking dope person she is. She is like, oh, so lovely, so kind, so loving, the nicest freaking person. And I love seeing really kind, like nice, genuinely happy people play these asshole characters. She does it so, so well. Also, Kate Burton, which again, I went on a Googling thing and I knew this already, but Kate Burton is the daughter of Richard Burton, who used to be married to Elizabeth Taylor. She's the daughter of Richard Burton and Sybil Williams, who was a Welsh actress.
And I just think it was amazing that on Scandal, we had our president and vice president were Hollywood royalty because we had Tony Goldwyn of Goldwyn Metro Mayor and his whole dynasty of like MGM. And then we had Sally Langston, played by Kate Burton, who's Richard Burton's daughter. Like we had like two Hollywood lineage of like, I mean, they have debt. They're Hollywood royalty.
It's in their blood. Yeah.
It's in their blood. It's why they can walk around and sort of be like, I'm the president and I'm vice president or whatever. Yeah. But my God, Sally Langston, again, in this episode, you get your first glimpse at Sally Langston, you get your first glimpse at Charlie, two people who were with us till the end.
Yes.
And who were in countless 8 billion episodes and were such geniuses on the show.
Yes.
And then we pull, I remember this like it was yesterday, we pull Amanda Tanner out of the Potomac.
Yes. We shot it in Long Beach. Do you remember that? Wasn't it Long Beach?
We shot it in Long Beach and I was so nervous because Scandal ABC or something was like making me go around at the same time and like interviewing you people. Do you remember this?
And we were pissed. You were kind of pissed because it's such an emotional, you know, scene. And you're like,
yeah, I was like, oh, my God, I'm watching Amanda Tanner being pulled out of the Potomac. And instead I'm going around. They've asked me to go around with my cell phone and being like, what do you like about Scandal? I'm like, obviously, that shit is important because the show was in no way, shape, form a hit in season one. And we were doing whatever we could on the social media fucking channels to get anyone to watch our show.
I feel like that was the hardest thing on the show was navigating, doing press stuff and being able to stay focused on our work on the show. You know what I mean? Because that would get thrown at us all the time where it was like they would come on set and we have to do EPKs, which is a electronic press kit. And you do all these interviews. But that would happen all the time. But navigating that was like
my first day. I remember it. Oh, my God. Amanda Tanner's being pulled out. We're all so upset. We didn't even know death was like a thing on the show, really.
Yeah.
And I'm going around being like, can you tell us what you think about Scandal? And I'm like, oh my God, this is, I actually have the video still in my phone. And when we put out this episode, I'm going to put that on so everyone can know what I'm talking about.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then we go to the morgue.
Oh man, Katie.
And that is me. Me and Guillermo were like best friends for life after that.
We bonded. I feel like that was our first like bonding moment where we truly bonded as you know, as Katie and Guillermo. Like, I don't know what the fuck happened. Maybe it was because we were shooting the scene where, you know, Amanda's dad is at the morgue and he has to identify her body. And it was already a super emotional, like somber, ominous sort of feeling on set. And somehow, like, what do you remember?
We talked about this on previous episodes where like, sometimes the tears are there and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of these days where for some reason, like in the universe, Guillermo and I were just like a well of emotion and tears and feelings. And we were standing at that window looking into the morgue at Amanda's body. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stop crying. And I'm just feeling the feelings of the show. And I had lost, I was kept, you know, things kept coming into my head and I had lost a friend who had died of lung cancer right when I auditioned for the part. And she, for some reason, was just like, her spirit was like very present in the room for me.
I remember you telling me that story. Yeah.
Instead of running away from it, I was really sinking into it and I was really emotional. And it was one of these days where it's like, we had the opportunity to really just like feel it, and Guillermo
to
was
use it,
right there with me.
Yeah, I remember me and you stepping like away from everyone. We were in the back of the set and we were talking about all this stuff and we couldn't stop crying. And I remember you telling me now that you guys all, I don't know if you still do it, go on a hike.
Every year on her death. Yeah, every year on her death.
That day sticks so strongly in my memory and it's so special.
Mine too.
Like I've never had an experience like that with someone. It was so special. It was so, Katie and I wrote down, no tear stick here. Remember we talked about, we didn't need that. See, sometimes you need that tear stick.
We didn't need that menthol blower.
Hell no.
We didn't need it. We got tears for fucking days.
We'll be back soon, guys.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Oh, this part, really quick. Mm-hmm. Olivia goes to touch Huck at that same scene, and you, like, quickly jerk yourself away, and we realize that it has taken a toll. It has, you getting Charlie on the tarp took its toll.
Yeah.
I wrote, Amanda Dead, we're crying. We were crying so much when we shot that. Do you remember, Guillermo? That's what I wrote.
Oh, my God. I wrote, do you remember, Katie? Oh, my God. Look, I wrote, Katie, !! Remember our special emotional time while filming at the coroner's? We couldn't stop crying. We truly bonded in this episode. Oh. No tear stick here. Oh, my God. That's so crazy.
We are. Okay. Then Darren Petty crying for his wife. Yeah. Finally, they get to the bottom of it, that, like, it was this poor fucking lady's fault about the plane. She made it to her daughter's recital and she
decided to just duplicate the report
when the plane was broken, and she sent it up the ladder and the plane was broken, but it was her fault for not filing it correctly. And
yes,
she's they're underpaid and overworked, and normally her job used to be two people's jobs, and she's amazing in that scene.
Can we just give a shout out to Lenora May, is the actress who played that role.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Guillermo Diaz, I am going to fucking make out with you.
Again? Okay.
Let this podcast be known as the Scandal Rewatch podcast, where every fucking actor gets their fucking shout out.
Yes. Lenora May. Amazing in this role.
And their respect. Lenora May was incredible.
And she was in an episode of Little House on the Prairie, which is one of my favorite shows ever, that Brad Yacobian freaking worked on. Did you know this?
I didn't know Brad. Brad, who was one of our producers of Scandal, was one of the producers on Little House on a Prairie?
Yes. Yes. He worked on Little House. Yep.
Didn't know.
She did an episode. She did an episode of Grey's. Lenora May. She's a very accomplished actor, and she was just wonderful in this fucking scene. Yeah.
She fucking demolished it.
And also Harrison's, Columbus's reaction to her. It was so great, so good, so real, so organic, so good.
It was so good. So we find that out, and Olivia's like, you know, lets the record be known that she was not drunk. She was an amazing pilot. The airplane says that they're at fault. Darren Petty, the actor who plays Andrew Mackelson, gets, you know, his sort of due of, like, wiping his wife's name clean.
Yes.
And then the quick wrap-up of the end of the episode is Tony calls in Hal and Tom.
So good.
The two fucking amazing Secret Service agents. And he's like, what do I need to do to get out of here? They list this ridiculous shit. He's like, I'll do it for this. And it's a hilarious joke line because they're like, he's just like 43.
Yes,
and
yes.
And they're like, whoa, is he like George Bush?
Yes.
Senior? Oh, no. 43 is George Bush Jr. Excuse me. I'm an idiot. George Bush Jr.
Yeah, no. I looked it up yesterday. I was like, which one is 43?
Then it cuts to Quinn goes to Gideon's apartment. He opens up the door. She's crying in his arms. And where is Tony going?
To Olivia's apartment, right?
Olivia's apartment. And she's on the phone with Steven as she opens the door. And he did fuck the lady in the morgue and did cheat on whatever her name
Georgia.
And he says it's Amanda was pregnant, but it was not Fitz's baby.
And right there, Olivia opens the door and Tony's standing right there. It's so good.
I mean, the episode is a banger.
But let's talk really quickly the moment with you and Gideon at the door. Such a beautiful scene, Katie.
Thank you.
Oh, you were so, so good. Like all those emotions that you had throughout the episode that the audience has, like it was released through you in that scene.
Like,
and it was so
tear
good.
Tear
stick, bitch. I need a tear stick. I ain't got it today.
I actually don't remember if I used a tear stick for that scene or not. I can't remember.
It doesn't matter because it was so good. And Gideon was so good.
He was really good. And I, you know, all I was thinking about was like, oh, fuck. Here's where we go into the grilled cheese sex scene, which we're going to get to in next week's episode.
Katie, I'm feeling like we should get into
tweet of the time. Is there any scandal tweets of the time that we should read that we feel like are hilarious and need to be mentioned? This is great. Tiffany Carter at Tiff D. Carr Tom on April 28th, 2012. Wrote, fact, Kerry Washington, first African-American lead actress in network show since 60s. Wow. Major. True? P.S. Hashtag major fashion on Scandal ABC. Yeah, guys, that shit was true. She, at the time, Kerry was the first African-American leading lady of a network drama in 37 years.
Wow.
The last drama was in 1968, and it was Julia, played by Diane Carroll. But like since Diane Carroll, there had not been an African-American leading lady of a drama in 37 years. How insane is that?
And that it was successful and that this show lasted so long. You know, it's such a wonderful thing.
It had to be successful. I mean, the problem, because Sliding Doors, had Scandal not been successful, there would have never been another Black leading lady again.
Oh,
like
totally.
For a long time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They would have been like, well, clearly that didn't work, so we're not going to take that risk again, whoever the they is.
Yeah.
But thank God everyone is amazing and watch the show, because then after Kerry, it was like it opened up so many doors to like there being all different looking types of people as leads of network shows.
Yeah.
Okay. Matt Midovich, who was a very huge supporter of Scandal for so long, at Matt Midovich on April 26th, tweeted, reminder, tonight at about 9:55 is when Scandal's scandalousness spikes for consecutive weeks straight through to the finale. So
yes.
I guess we were like gaining some traction. I guess like 4 people were watching the show.
Right. Jersey Femme, that's it. She says, oh my God, Scandal ABC was straight crazy. Kerry Washington, you better act, boo. Hashtag Scandal.
Heck yeah. Lego. What the hell does that mean?
Lego.
S.B. Franklin. Oh, Lego. I'm an idiot, but you learn something new every day.
I think it's like that, right? I think it's like, let's go or something like that. Yeah.
They wrote, S.B. Franklin wrote at Scandal ABC. Heck yeah. Lego. Hashtag Scandal. I'm ready to gladiate or whatever, which was Quinn's line.
Yes.
Hashtag Scandal quotes. LOL. David Nett wrote, replying to Josh Molina, Josh Molina, you, sir, are the glue that holds Scandal ABC together. Boo. Also, you've left sticky fingerprints all over my TV. Please stop.
Yeah.
Oh,
like
is
when
that
he put,
like a person? Are they friends?
I don't know. Like what you mean, like when he put peanut butter on Portia de Rossi's like car handle?
He put fucking whipped cream and shaving cream all over my trailer doors, all over my car door handles. Oh, yeah. He put that shit all over my car door handles.
We have to do a whole episode of the shit that Josh pulled.
Josh,
yeah.
He did? What did he say?
Well, he called me, changed his voice, and left me a message on my voicemail saying he was a New York City police detective and that I was in big trouble. And Katie, that whole day, me being so anxious, I was an emotional mess because I was like, oh my God, what have I done?
Josh Molina got a voice changer app on his phone that he could leave voicemails and it didn't sound like him. He left me a voicemail that said, we've got your phone number and we heard some scoop on Scandal about someone's behavior. You need to call us back immediately. And I was shitting bricks because I was like, how did a reporter get my cell phone number? Like, and I've never been on a show that's successful and I don't know what to say. And am I supposed to call my back? And I don't even have a publicist. We're going to do, when we have Josh on, we're going to go real hard.
We're going to talk about all this stuff. Hell yeah.
All the pranking he did. Those are some tweets of the time. This has been such an amazing episode of Scandal Rewatch
it really
Podcast
was.
Because it ended up with tears and praise and Guillermo Diaz just doing the most incredible dramaturgical researcher work on every guest star on the Scandal show. And they are so appreciative. And I am so appreciative of the work you've done.
Oh, please. Oh, my God. This is, I can't imagine doing this with anyone else but you. Like, it's truly a gift that we get to do this.
You guys, please tell your friends that this is a fucking laugh riot. You feel all the feelings,
yep.
All the gladiators. You have a place to come now. Like, gladiators, where have you been?
Yes.
What have you been up to? Listen to this podcast. Tell all your gladiator friends. Rewatch the show. Next week, we are going to be talking about episode 106, The Trail, which is literally one of the most famous Scandal episodes of all time.
Yes. So good. So, so good.
So make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends. Episode 106, The Trail is coming. And thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
To the Scandal Rewatch podcast.
Thank you, gladiators. We love you guys.
We love you guys so much.
Thank you guys for joining us on Unpacking the Toolbox. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, share with your friends, rate, or leave us a review.
Scandal is executive produced by Sandy Bailey, Alex Alche, Lauren Homan, Tyler Klang, and Gabrielle Collins. Our producer and editor is Vince DiGianni, with music by Chad Fisher.
Scandal is a production of ABC Signature, and you can follow along by rewatching Scandal on Hulu.
Unpacking the Toolbox is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app or anywhere you subscribe to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.